Hey friends, thanks so much for joining us today on Pastor Rick's Daily Hope, the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Rick Warren. We're so glad to have you with us. And today, Rick continues in his series called Transform. Together, we'll dive into God's Word and discover powerful principles that can truly change our lives from the inside out. Spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally, relationally, financially, and vocationally. You'll experience how God's truth brings real transformation to every part of your life. Now, here's Pastor Rick with part one of a message called Facing Giants in Life and Work.
Now this weekend, we're concluding 50 Days of Transformation, and I want us to look at how do you face the giants in your life and at work. You know, we've looked at seven key areas of your life. We started with physical health, and then we looked at spiritual health, and we looked at emotional health, and we looked at relational health, and we looked at financial health. And we've looked at all of these different areas, seven areas, and tonight, or today, we end with vocational health, or how do you make it at work? Now, your ability to dream is a God-given gift. It's what makes you different from animals. Animals cannot imagine the future. God gave you as a human being, made in his image, the ability to see the past, that's called memory, and to visualize or imagine the future. That's called dreaming. You got to have a dream. If you don't have a dream for your life, you're literally just drifting. You're just drifting along. You're letting life happen to you. And by the way, when you're coasting, you're always going downhill. So you need a dream for your life. It is the greatest gift that God has given you, the ability to dream. We are most like our Creator when we are creative. Nothing happens without a dream. Everything you see, every piece of art, every business, every architecture, every product, everything happens because somebody thought it up first. Everything begins as a dream. Napoleon says, imagination rules the world. And Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge. It is that ability to dream that makes us creators in the image of God. Now, I've invested my life encouraging people to discover God's dream, God's purpose for their lives, and then helping them fulfill that dream. And what I've discovered is that for every person who figures out their life dream, their life work, which is far more important than your job, because your jobs are going to change, but your life work is the dream that God gives you for your life. For every person who figures that out and heads after their dream, there are nine people who are afraid to get started. And what causes us to be afraid to go after our dream are what I call the giants in the pathway. These are giant problems. These are dream busters that stand there in your path saying, you will not pass by. You will not go any further than this. And if you believe it, you get stuck in mediocrity. These problems can be financial problems, they can be emotional problems, they can be relational problems, they can be problems with your health. What do you do when you face these giants in life? How do you face the giants in your life and work? Well, fortunately, we have a wonderful story in the Bible that shows us how to deal with the giants in our lives. It's called the story of David and Goliath. My friend Malcolm Gladwell, who's written four New York Times best-selling books, has a book out called David and Goliath. And it's called Underdogs, Misfits, and the Art of Battling Giants. And so I invited Malcolm, since I knew I was going to be teaching on this text, to come and share this message with me. Let me read the initial text. 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now the Philistines had gathered their forces for war. They occupied one hill, and the Israelites another, with the valley between them. A champion named Goliath from Gath came out of the Philistine camp. He was a giant of a man. One translation says 9 feet tall, one says seven. They're very different in the translations. Wearing a huge bronze helmet and a coat of bronze armor that weighed over 125 pounds. So this guy's a big man. He also wore bronze leggings. and he slung a huge bronze javelin over his back. The iron spearhead alone on his javelin weighed 15 pounds, and a soldier with a large shield always walked in front of Goliath. I want you to give a warm, rousing Saddleback welcome to Malcolm Gladwell. Would you give him a warm welcome right now? Malcolm Gladwell.
Hi. Thanks, Rick. Thank you. It's an incredible honor to be asked to come and participate in the service today. Before I started, I had a little bit of a moral dilemma on my way, and I was looking to park, and I was going to cheat a bit and try and get closer to the church. So I pulled into one of the reserved lots and said, one of the spaces said, "Reserved for weekend pastor." And I thought, technically, I'm not a pastor, but it is the weekend, and I will be standing up here and preaching. So I parked. wanted to get that out of the way, off my chest. So Pastor Rick asked me to come and to introduce the lesson today, which is about this one of the most famous of all the stories in the Bible, the duel between David and Goliath. And it's a story that has enormous interest to me. It was the story that inspired my latest book, and I've thought a lot about it. And it fascinates me because it's a story with all kinds of unexpected depth and complexity. So many of you know the basic outlines of the story, which is that there is this duel 3,000 years ago in Palestine. And that's probably the best place to start because it's important to understand a little bit about the geography of ancient Palestine to put that story in context. Palestine, in fact, Israel even today, has a mountain range that runs down its eastern border. And in the mountains are all of the traditional, most famous cities of Israel: Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and Hebron. And then the western half of the country is a flat coastal plain that borders on the Mediterranean, and that's where Tel Aviv is today. And in between the plain and the mountains, there's an area called the Shephelah. And the Shephelah is a series of valleys and ridges that run east to west that connect the plain with the mountains. And if you've ever been to Israel, you'll know that that is just about the most beautiful part of the country. Incredibly gorgeous. These are valleys filled with oak trees and with vineyards and with wheat fields. It is also, though, the most strategically crucial part of the country because the valleys are the means by which people living in the plains can advance into the mountains. And so time and time again over the course of history, battles have been fought for control of Israel in the Shephelah. And that's exactly what happens 3,000 years ago with the Philistines and the Israelites. The Philistines are the historic enemies of the kingdom of Israel, and they are a people who occupy the plain. They came from Crete, they're a seafaring people, and they were living in and around what is now Tel Aviv. And they decide they want to go and conquer the kingdom of Israel, which is clustered in the mountains. And so they start to climb up through one of those valleys. And King Saul, who is the king of Israel at that moment, catches wind of what the Philistines are doing and brings his army down from the mountains to meet the Philistines. And the two sides meet in an area of the Shephelah called the Valley of Elah. And the Israelites dig in along the northern ridge, and the Philistines dig in along the southern ridge, and the two armies start staring. They just look at each other because it's a standoff. Neither can attack the other because to attack, you'd have to come down the ridge, onto the valley floor, and then up the other side. And as you were doing that, you would expose yourself to your enemy, right? So it's a deadlock. And they sit there for weeks, just kind of looking at each other. And finally, the Philistines have had enough. And they send a mighty warrior, a giant, down onto the valley floor. And he challenges the Israelites to send a mighty warrior of their own, and they will duke it out. They will settle the conflict in a one-on-one combat. And this is something That was a tradition in ancient times. It was done all the time. It's called single combat. Two warriors from each side would fight on behalf of their armies, and each army would accept the outcome. So this giant's standing there in the valley floor, basically saying, come on, who's going to take me on? And no one on the Israelite side has the guts to take him on. He's too big. He's ferocious. He's got outfitted top to bottom in all kinds of, you heard the account of all of the incredible armor he's got. He's 7 foot tall, or maybe even more than that. I mean, he's really a terrifying figure. Nobody will take him on, except for this kid who comes up to King Saul and says, I'll do it. And Saul looks at him and says, you're insane. You're a child. You can't take on a 7 foot warrior. And the kid says, well, actually, I'm not a kid. I'm a shepherd. I've done some time out there in the fields. I've killed some lions in my day. I'm not pathetic. Saul's like, no, you're not going. And the kid says, well, no, actually, I really want to do it. And Saul realizes that he doesn't have a choice because no one else is volunteering, right? This is all he has. So he's like, all right. And he tries to give the kid his armor. He says, look, take this so at least you've got some preparation for going up against the giant. And the kid says, no, not doing it. Instead, what he does is he reaches down and he picks up a couple of stones from the ground. He puts them in his pouch and he marches down the side of the hill with a shepherd's staff and this little bag of rocks. And the giant is looking at him and says, come to me so I might feed your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Meaning he's like, come on over, I'm going to like chew you up. Right? And the boy gets closer and the giant sees that doesn't have a sword and a shield. All he has is this shepherd's staff and this little bag. And the giant's insulted. He's the biggest warrior in all of ancient Palestine. And here they've sent a kid up against him. And he says, am I a dog that you should come to me with sticks, right? Referring to the staff. And the kid gets even closer. And the kid says, no, I come to you in the name of the Lord God Almighty. And he reaches into his bag and he takes out one of those rocks and he puts it into his sling and he whirls it around and the rock goes forward and it hits the giant right here between the eyes. And the giant goes, falls over, and the boy runs up to him and grabs his sword and chops off his head, and Israel wins the day. And the Philistines turn around and they go running all the way back to the coastal plain, right? That is the story of David and Goliath. The kid is David and the giant is Goliath, and we've all heard that story 1,000 times. And the reason I got really interested in it when I was writing my book is that the closer I looked at the story, the more I realized that I and many of us had fundamentally misinterpreted what it meant. So we use that story as a kind of metaphor for stories about improbable victories, right? The overwhelming favorite goes up against the one in a million long shot, and the one in a million long shot wins the day. Now, why do we call David a one in a million long shot? Well, one reason is that he's a kid. He's a shepherd, and he's up against an experienced warrior. Second reason is he's normal-sized, probably my size, skinny and tiny and sort of very unassuming. And he's up against a guy who's 7 foot at least, right? But the biggest reason we think of David as being this improbable long shot is that Goliath is decked out in head-to-toe armor and has got every weapon known to ancient warriors in his hands, and all David has is a sling. Well, that's a good place to start, because I think that's where we go wrong. Let's start with that phrase, all David has is a sling. Ancient armies had three kinds of warriors. They had people who rode in chariots, cavalry, right? People on horseback and in chariots. They had heavy infantry, which is foot soldiers wearing armor, full body armor, and carrying swords and shields. And they had artillery. And artillery was made up of people with bows and arrows and slingers. Slingers were trained artillery who used a sling. And a sling was a leather pouch which had two long ropes attached to it. And you would put a rock in the middle of the pouch, and you would whirl it around like this and let one of the ropes go, and so the rock would be propelled forward. Right? Very often when we talk, when people tell the story of David and Goliath, they make it sound like David had a slingshot, right? Like it's some kind of child's toy. Slingshots are not deadly weapons. If they were, most parents would be dead by now. David did not have a slingshot. He had a sling, and a sling is a very, very different and far more lethal weapon. We have people who've studied slings, and there are, as is the case with most interesting things in the world, a group of sling nerds out there who have done all of the calculations. We know that an experienced slinger would rotate that sling 6 or 7 times a second, which means if you do the math, that the rock would be traveling at 35 meters per second. So if Goliath is 100 feet from David, the rock will reach Goliath in less than a second. Right? Before, Goliath barely knows what's happening, and boom, it's hitting him in the middle of the head. Now, the second interesting thing is that the rock that David used was probably what's called barium sulfate, which is common in the Valley of Elah. And it's a very heavy rock. And if you do the math on the ballistics of that, that rock had a stopping power equal to a bullet from a .45 caliber handgun, right? This is a serious weapon. Now, what about accuracy? Well, we know from other discussions of slingers in the Bible, and also from discussions in medieval warfare, that slingers, experienced slingers, and David was an experienced slinger, were incredibly accurate. They could hit birds in flight with their sling. Right? So there is no question that what David has is a weapon that is entirely capable of taking out Goliath. In fact, in ancient warfare, slingers were routinely used to match up against heavy infantry. That's what you rolled out when you were faced with a bunch of people who were dressed head to toe in armor with swords and shields. So there's Goliath. He's heavy infantry. And what he expects is he's going to have a battle with another heavy infantryman. Then when he says, come to me that I might feed your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field, the key phrase is come to me, meaning come right here, because we're going to have hand-to-hand combat. But David's not an idiot. He's not going to go into hand-to-hand combat with a guy who's twice his size. He's going to use the weapon that he spent his career as a shepherd training with, which is a sling. So here we have a guy who has changed the rules of combat without telling his opponent, has superior technology, and is filled with the Spirit of the Lord, right? And yet we insist on calling him an underdog. Why? Isn't he the favorite? You've got superior technology, and you've changed the rules without telling your opponent, and you have God in your heart, that doesn't make you the favorite? Second interesting thing about that story. It's not just the case that we seem to have radically underestimated David's power. It's also that we've misunderstood Goliath. Goliath is supposed to be this mighty warrior, right? But the truth is, if you read that passage in 1 Samuel about the battle between David and Goliath, there are all kinds of things, details, that are completely inconsistent with that idea of Goliath as this indomitable warrior. The first is that he's led onto the valley floor by an attendant. Someone brings him down to the point where the fight's supposed to take place, right? That doesn't make any sense. If he's the greatest warrior in all of Palestine, why is he being led by the hand like a preschooler crossing the street, right? Second thing is that the story, the biblical account, stresses how slowly Goliath moves, right? Why is a great, fearsome, ferocious warrior moving so slowly? Then there's this weird fact that it takes Goliath an awful long time to figure out what's going on, right? David comes down from the hill, and he's got a staff and a little bag of rocks, and he's wearing his shepherd's outfit. It's clear from the outset this kid has no intention of fighting a sword fight, right? What does Goliath do? He just stands there and says, "Come to me that I might feed your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." He's not getting it. Why is he not getting it? Then there's the strange thing, he says, when David draws close and he sees that he's carrying a staff. He says, "Am I a dog that you would come to me with sticks?" David doesn't have sticks. David has a stick, right? Why is Goliath seeing two sticks when there's only one? Well, the answer to these puzzles has been provided by a whole group of, believe it or not, endocrinologists who have gotten really interested, medical experts who've gotten really interested in Goliath, and who have pointed out that there is a plausible explanation for a lot of those anomalies. And it begins with Goliath's size. You know, Goliath is huge, head and shoulders above anyone else in his day. And whenever we are confronted with people who are that big, that unusually tall, we usually look for some kind of physiological explanation. And the most common cause of giantism, as it's called, is a condition called acromegaly. And acromegaly is caused by a tumor on your pituitary gland that causes the overproduction of human growth hormone. And most of the great giants in human history have acromegaly. So my fellow Canadian, Andre the Giant, the professional wrestler, famous Canadian wrestler. I realize the words famous Canadian and wrestler are rarely used in combination. But famous two Canadians wrestler, he had acromegaly. The tallest man of all time, a guy named Robert Wadlow, who died at 8'11", he had acromegaly. There's a good chance that Goliath has acromegaly. And what's interesting about that is that there is a very common side effect of acromegaly, and that is that the tumor can sometimes grow so large that it starts to compress the optic nerves, the nerves that feed your eyes from your brain, with the result that many people who have acromegaly have severely restricted vision. They have real problems with eyesight. Well, now think of that in the context of all of those anomalies in the story of David and Goliath. Here's a man who moves really slowly. Why? Because he's scared of tripping on a rock that he can't see. Here's a guy who has to be led onto the valley floor by an attendant. Why? Because he can't make his way on his own. Here's a guy who takes forever to figure out that David is not, in fact, intending to fight him in a sword fight. Why? Because he can't see David. Right? And when he says, "Come to me that I might feed your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field," the key phrase is "come to me" because he needs David to be right here. Otherwise, he can't see him. And then when he says, "Am I a dog that you should come to me with sticks?" Why is he seeing two sticks? Because he has double vision, right? What the Israelites saw from high up on the hill was someone who appeared to be this mighty warrior. But in fact, the very thing that gave the giant his size was the cause of his greatest weakness. That, to me, is the first and most lesson of the story of David and Goliath, right? Giants are not what they seem. The kinds of obstacles we face in our life are not nearly as insurmountable and depressing and overwhelming as they appear to be at first blush. Look closely and you'll see a different truth, right? Giants can be slain, particularly by those who have the Spirit of the Lord in their hearts.
Now, it's unlikely that you're ever going to have to face a physical giant like David did. But it is highly likely that you're going to have to face a whole lot of other common giants. These giants of financial problems, relational problems, marriage problems, work problems, problems that keep you from going after your dream. And in this story, 1 Samuel 17, David actually had to fight four other giants before he gets to Goliath. They weren't physical giants, but they were giants in here, in his mind. You are far more likely to have to face those giants than a Goliath, but they can be just as big and just as intimidating and can keep you from becoming who God wants you to be and fulfilling the dream that God has put in your heart. Let me give you a little background. The chapter before this chapter in the Bible, chapter 16, here's an interesting story. A man named Samuel, this book is called 1 Samuel because it's named after the chief religious leader that day. Samuel was the prophet of Israel in that day. And in 1 Samuel 16, God says to Samuel, I want you to go to the town of Bethlehem, and I want you to find a guy named Jesse. And you're going to anoint Jesse's son as the next king of Israel. Now, the existing king was still alive, very much alive, Saul, but God had already decided Saul's days were over. So this is a secret plan. And God just tells Samuel, you're going to go anoint the next king of Israel. So Samuel goes to Jerusalem. He finds this guy named Jesse. He says, do you have a son? Jesse says, not only do I have a son, I've got eight. And so Samuel goes, well, then I'm going to have to look at them all. So Samuel brings his Jesse brings his seven oldest sons to parade them before the prophet to see which one's going to become the king of Israel. And he shows him the oldest son, and Samuel goes, not the guy. Next. He shows him the second oldest, says, not the guy. Next. He shows him his third oldest son, not the guy. Next. He's going, no, five, six, seven. And none of the guys are it. Samuel goes, you got any other kids? Jesse goes, oh yeah, there's one more, the youngest, the runt, little David. But he's like a pipsqueak, and I didn't even mind bringing him in. He's out tending the sheep. He said, bring him in. He brings in the youngest. Samuel takes one look at him and says, that's the guy. And he anoints him as king of Israel. Now, you know what happens after this? Nothing. Nothing happens. Jesse says to his youngest kid, okay, now get back out there and start tending the sheep. Nothing at all changes in David's life. He has been given the dream. He's been told, you're the next king of Israel, but get back out there and tend the sheep. And there is actually quite a long delay between when David is anointed as king and he actually sees the fulfillment of his dream years later. There's a big delay. And I would say that this is exactly what happens in your life. And the first giant in facing your dream, you might want to write this down, is delay. The no dream is fulfilled instantly. God gives you the dream on one day, and he doesn't fulfill it the next day. No, it's years later that you see the fulfillment of your life dream. There is always a time delay. There is always a time lapse. There is always a waiting period. And in David's case, his dad holds him back from the dream. In David's case, his dad held him back and said, David, you need to get back out there and start tending sheep. He didn't think David was old enough or experienced enough to be the king of Israel. And in verse 12 to 15, it says this. Now, David was the youngest of Jesse's eight sons, and his three older brothers enlisted in Saul's army. But David was held back, circle that, held back to care for the sheep in Bethlehem. The first barrier of your dream is this. There are going to be people who hold you back. There are going to be people in your life who hold you back from the dream that God has given you. Some of you know what I'm talking about. You have been held back from what you want to do with your life because of your age. Some of you have been held back because of what you want to do with your life and what the dream God's given you because of your race. Some of you have been held back because of your gender. Some of you have been held back because you weren't pretty enough or handsome enough or smart enough or whatever enough. Discrimination in any form is a barrier that you have to break through. And there will be people who want to hold you back. Now, here's the sad part. Sometimes the people who hold you back the most are those who love you the most. In this case, it's David's dad. His dad isn't going, go for it. My son's going to be the king of Israel. He said, no, get back out there and tend the sheep. Because Jesse would just as soon not have his son be the king of Israel. He'd lose a worker. You see, God has a plan for your life, but so does everybody else. And when God's plan contradicts somebody else's plan, there's going to be a delay, and people are going to try to hold you back. Others have plans for your life too. David's dad just wanted him to be a shepherd. And there's this delay, and you're going to see this delay in your life. Sometimes even people who love you will hold you back from the dream God has given you. Now, at one point, Jesse goes, you know, my three favorite sons, they're out on the front line with Saul fighting the battle. And he tells David, I want you to take a care package of food to your older brothers at the battlefield. So he gives David all this food and he sends him off. And this way, David gets to see the battle. And when he's there delivering the foods to his older brothers, he hears Goliath coming down every day and shouting these taunts and saying, we're going to, you know, whip your rear and we're going to win the battle and you guys are all going to be defeated. And David notices nobody's doing anything about this guy. And he notices everybody around here is scared to death. They're all embarrassed. They're all afraid. They're all terrorized. They're all traumatized. Nobody wants to do anything. They're all scared to death. And this is the second barrier you will face in finding and fulfilling your dream. And it is this: discouragement. You will face discouragement because everybody around you is scared to death. Nobody thinks you can do it. Nobody has hope. Nobody believes that you can take down this giant. And they're all scared to death, and they're all convincing each other that it's impossible to make any difference. You see, Goliath had created a climate of fear in Israel, and everybody had concluded, we're going to lose this battle, and nobody can beat Goliath. In verses 8 to 10, it says this: each day Goliath would stand and shout at the ranks of Israel's army. He would say, why do you come out here and line up for battle? Choose one man to fight me, and if he's able to kill me, we'll become your subjects. But if I kill him, you'll become our subjects and serve us. Day after day, circle that, day after day, Goliath taunted them, saying, this day I defy the ranks of Israel. And when Saul, that's a king, and Israelites heard this, everyone was deeply shaken and paralyzed with fear. Now notice the situation. They're all demoralized. They're gripped with anxiety. They're terrified. They're traumatized. They feel hopeless. One translation says they were so frightened they couldn't do anything. Have you ever been in a situation where everybody around you thought this is hopeless? Maybe you have been at work and in your office say, hey, in this economy, nobody can grow anything. We can't solve this problem. It's going down the tubes. And everybody around you is saying, it can't be done, it can't be done, it can't be done. It's never going to happen, it's never going to happen. And they're all discouraged, and they're all convincing each other because they're all filled with fear. And they say, there's nothing we can do about this problem. Let me tell you something. Conventional wisdom is often wrong. It is often wrong. Wrong. Everybody there was wrong. It says there twice in that passage, Goliath challenged the ranks of the Israeli army. Sometimes the solution has to come outside the rank and file. What you need is a little kid from a village to come and go, we can do this. What you need is a fresh set of eyes. Because the professionals were wrong. The crowd was wrong. Just because everybody says it's so doesn't make it so. The crowd is often wrong. Just because somebody says the crowd says it's true doesn't mean it's true. And so somebody had to challenge the status quo.
Thank you for listening to Pastor Rick's Daily Hope. I've got some great news to share with you today. We've got some generous friends of Daily Hope that have offered a $50,000 matching grant. And now here's Rick to tell you more about it.
You know, I started Daily Hope so I could spread the good news about Jesus, not just across America, but all around the world. And we want people to know that God's Word is filled with hope and truth. And the power that we need to follow him every day is available to every single one. You know as well as I do that the Word of God changes lives. It's alive, it's active, and it breathes new life and new love into all of our lives.
So wherever you listen to this, whether you listen on the website, whether you listen on a radio station, or whether you listen through a podcast, you're a part of the Daily Hope family, and I need your help. We could not do this without your support. Now, you know, I don't take any funds from this broadcast. We don't have any giant million-dollar donor who's giving big gifts to this. It comes from daily donations from listeners like you. We're 100% listener-funded. Would you continue to pray for this broadcast, and would you continue to support us? And write to me. Let me hear from you. I absolutely love reading the stories that are sent to me. So write me, pray for me, and support this ministry. And God will bless it, and God will bless you, and we'll get to heaven, and we'll thank God for all the people going to be in heaven because you cared.
You know, when you give a gift to Daily Hope, you're helping share the hope of Jesus with people everywhere. And right now, your gift will be doubled by the $50,000 matching grant. So please go to PastorRick.com or text the word HOPE to 70309. And I don't mean to pressure you, but please don't wait because this special matching grant offer ends in just a few days. Again, go to PastorRick.com or just text the word HOPE to 70309. Be sure to join us next time as we look into God's Word for our daily hope. This program is sponsored by Pastor Rick's Daily Hope and your generous financial support.